Hey, Marriage After God friends. Thank you for your continued faithfulness and listening each and every week. Jennifer and I have often shared with you about how important prayer is in the life of a believer. It's so important, in fact, that we're told this in 1 Thessalonians. Rejoice always, pray without ceasing, give thanks in all circumstances, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus for you. It is God's will for us to pray, and we want to inspire you to begin praying for your spouse and marriage every day. This world hates marriage, and so does our enemy, because he knows the power that your marriage is meant to have in this world. He knows that if you and your spouse are praying and chasing boldly after God together, that the impact Christ will have in and through you will be powerful. So we need to be praying more than ever before. Our heart is to encourage you, along with everyone who listens to this show, to be praying for your spouses and your marriages, to be strengthened, renewed, healed, prepared, and empowered to do the ministry that God has for you to do in this world together. So, Jennifer and I would love to invite you to join the thousands of other couples in taking our 31-day marriage prayer challenge. This is a completely free and fun way to build a habit of prayer in your marriage. All you have to do to join is visit marriageprayerchallenge.com and fill out the registration form. Once you do that, you will begin to receive an email every day from us during the 31 days to not only remind you to pray for your spouse, but we'll also give you various topics and prompts to help you know what to pray for. We dare your marriage to start praying like never before. Start the challenge today at marriageprayerchallenge.com.
Hey friends, I just wanted to talk to you for a few seconds. We're going to get into the content soon. But if you're new to this show, we just want to invite you to subscribe. We're trying to see 2025 be a year of growth and expansion. We just need people like you to subscribe to our channel and to share about the episodes that you just are totally in love with on social media. And then lastly, if you can leave us a review today, we'd greatly appreciate it. The algorithms will appreciate it. And so thank you so much for joining us on the Marriage After God podcast. And I just pray that you enjoy this content. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Marriage After God podcast. In today's episode, I'm interviewing Bethany Beal. Her and her sister Kristen wrote a new book called Made to Be She. And in this book, they tackle the ideas and definitions that the world has around women, around being a woman. And they really bring you back to the godly biblical definition of who a woman is and what God has made you women to be. But in this conversation, we talk about her testimony, her family upbringing. She grew up in a large family. Parents are believers. And we got to discuss the beauty of her being in a large family and also the strength of a father's word to his daughters and how she had such a strong foundation of her worth, of who she is, of boundaries because of the relationship she had with her father. And so we dig into that. And it really encouraged me as a father of three little girls of what it means when we speak certain types of words, certain life into our daughters and in building them up so that they know who they are and what they're worth and also where they can, that they can get their affections and their love from their father. So they don't need to seek it from other people. And so we discussed that with her and we talked about the way of the world and feminism and how it's fed a lie to women. And the beauty of motherhood and the power of being a wife and a mother and to our children. So we discussed a lot of things that, to be honest, they were really encouraging to me as a husband and as a father because it reminded me of my role in the home. But our discussion went really deep into God's definition of womanhood, of motherhood, of marriage, of all of these things. And I just want you to take the time to listen to this whole episode. It's very good. And towards the end, we get into a really good conversation about just the way that the world has tried to shift our focus from the home to individuality and how we want to see a renaissance. And we are seeing a renaissance of people in this world going back to God's idea of marriage, God's idea of the home and family and the power of the family unit. So please enjoy this conversation with Bethany Beal. Hey, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jennifer.
And we're the hosts of the Marriage After God podcast. Our desire is to help you cultivate a marriage that chases boldly after God's will for your life together.
We want to invite you to subscribe to our show wherever you watch or listen.
We are so glad you're here, and we pray that our discussion truly blesses you and your marriage.
Welcome to the Marriage After God podcast.
All right. Hey, Bethany Beal, thank you so much for joining the Marriage After God podcast.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here. After many back and forths, we made it.
I know. It's been months of us trying to get this planned out. Sickness and family tragedies on both our sides. And so, but we've made it. We're here. We're going to talk about your book coming up here soon. But really, I think it'd be good to start off with some background. Jennifer and I have connected with you and your sister, Kristen, years ago, because you guys have a ministry online. We had a ministry online. We did some giveaway stuff. And it's just been fun seeing your guys' progression, because I'm pretty sure I met you guys digitally, back pre-marriage, I think.
Yes.
And then you guys got married. And so you had a ministry pre-married, speaking to single women. And then just, you still do that, but now you transition to talking to married women. And, but really love, you and your sister love ministering to women. So tell me some of the background, you and your sister, you yourself, age, marriage, children, a little bit of that backstory. So my audience, know you guys.
So I know you have a lot of kids, and my sister and I come from a big family. There are 8 kids, and we're all very tall. You can't see on the camera, but I'm 6'1". So whenever we meet, like, girl-defined people in real life, they're always like, oh my God, you're so tall. But in my family, we're all giants. So I'm like, we're just normal, you know. But growing up, you know, a lot of girls in our family, 5 girls, 3 boys, and Kristen and I are less than like 2 years apart. So we've kind of experienced all of life together. And as the high school years hit, we were homeschooled. Then like early college years hit, Kristen and I, just because we're both really tall and blonde, we got approached a lot by different modeling agencies, and our parents were like, nope, that's not going to happen. Like, that's not the direction we want you
that
to go.
Sounds wise,
that's not
your
how
parents.
We raised you. And Kristen and I were like, oh, but like, you know, we were just kind of like young and naive and like, oh my goodness, this sounds so amazing. And this would just be so fun. And we didn't really at that point, either of us have like a vision or a passion for formal ministry. We were just like, what's next? What's going to happen? And so after a while, our parents actually gave in and let us each go and do in-person interviews with different modeling agencies. And I think their plan was that we would see the reality of it and come running back and be like, it's horrible. And so that's not what actually happened to me. I went and did an interview with like the top guy at this agency, and it was a disgusting experience, like all around. I'm still, even though that was what, like 15 years ago, I'm still scarred by it, because I'm like, it was just so gross and degrading. And he literally acted like I should be like groveling on the ground even to be in his presence. And they're just, you know, the posters. It was just a horrible, disgusting experience. And he basically told me, and this was a turning point in my life, why I'm sharing this is because he told me, he's like, we would rather have women who we would consider less attractive, but are willing to do more, willing to compromise more, than women who are more attractive, but have boundaries and standards. So he's like, basically, like, it doesn't matter. Like, if you're not willing to do everything and do what we want, like, you're not going to get anywhere. So basically, that's it. You know, and I was like, yeah, that's not for me. So I left and never looked back. Kristen has a different story, and we share it in, you know, our book, Girl Defined, and through our ministry. But that kind of marked a point in my life where I was like, what do I want to do with my life? Is this what's out there? Is this what it's about? Like climbing the ladder and compromising? Like, is this really what I was raised for? And that was the turning point where I decided, like, no, I want to use my life to make a difference and to point other women to Christ and really to show them like where their worth is found, where their value is found. Because if I felt that pressure to go and like want to pursue this like success and this career and these accolades, like I know, you know, even now in this day and age with social media, women feel that pressure. And so long story short, Kristen and I decided to start Girl Defined now 11 years ago, no connection, literally did not come from like a formal ministry family. And God has just been so good. Within literally months of posting our first blog, because, you know, blog posts back in the day were the thing. We were literally contacted. We were contacted by Baker Books, Baker Publishing House. And they just assumed we were like this big ministry that had been around for years. And so they were like, literally on the spot, found one of our blog posts. I mean, we're new, you know, 3 months into this, and they offer us a book contract literally on the spot. We thought it was spam because we're like, this is too good to be true. So that's kind of what happened. That's how Girl Defined got started. We just published our 6th book, Made to Be She, and it's just been amazing. Life has changed though, because I was very single when we started Girl Defined. Kristen was actually married, but she's had a long journey of infertility, so they didn't have kids. I was obviously single, didn't have kids. And then I now, through that process, got married and have been married for 6 years, have two kids. So Kristen and I, the whole ministry has kind of changed, because when you're very single, feel like you're in the desert lands, you're just speaking to that, you know, and just kind of, we both kind of spoke to that girl. And now our audience has grown with us, and we're married and very passionate about those topics now. So our passions and our heart for women have kind of grown and expanded with our life experience.
Amazing. Yeah. And that's a pretty common thing. Like the the ministry follows your sanctification process, where you are here with God and then where you are here with God, and it just grows. Yeah. My wife and I have experienced the exact same thing. But you guys have been consistent. I love the name of your ministry, Girl Defined, is what you're focusing on is defining a godly woman. What does God see as a woman, which is specifically the topic of your newest book, right?
This
idea of what is a woman that's been so prevalent, and which is crazy that even has to be defined, but it does. I just want to go back. I had a question for you. You said you're 6'1", which is, it's amazing that you have an all big family. Are you and your sister the shortest in your family? Are your brothers taller?
Yeah. So we are both 6'1". We're like the exact same height. We look the most similar. I'm like, God just made us like practically twins, but not, I don't know, like to confuse people online. People are always like, wait, are y'all the same? Like, no. Our shortest person in our family is 5'10", and that's one of our sisters. So she is like, we always are like, you're such a shrimp. You're only 5'10", you know.
Well, that's, I think that's above average for women. Yeah.
I know. Our brothers, we have like 2 6'8" brothers, another 6'4" brother.
You say
we have strong 6'8", yeah.
Oh my goodness. That's amazing.
So wow. I just feel, I would like growing up, I'm like, we would go to church and there's 10 of us, you know, because 8 kids and 2 parents, and we all grew very fast and we're all like full grown by like, you know.
You didn't sit in the front row.
Sometimes we would sit like closer up and we'd always, it just felt like a circus, you know. You already have a big family, but then being so giant, like anytime we'd go out to eat, anywhere we went, it just felt like the entire restaurant was staring. And as a teenage girl, I was like, oh, everyone's watching us, you know, like so embarrassed, you know, like all of us piling out of the van. But now it's like, I love being tall. I love my height. I love my family. I love like the bigness of our family and the personality and, you know, which is an interesting fact. I always assumed I would marry someone taller, but then my wonderful husband came along and I had, you know, we got married when I was 30. And so I had dated a bunch before then. And I feel like I really knew like what I wanted and what I was looking for. And he is a little bit shorter than me. So people are always like, oh my gosh, like you're so tall. He's a little bit shorter, but it's beautiful. And it's worked out. And I absolutely love him. I think he's like the best ever. And he's all proud. He's like, yeah, I got her, you know?
That's so awesome. I love hearing how you talk about your family also. This is, I love highlighting these situations, because a big part of our testimony is our family upbringing. I don't believe that we are just a product of our upbringing. We're a product of how God created us. We have our genetic makeup. We're the combination of the genetics of our parents, but we're also the combination of our uniqueness and how we have responded to our upbringing, and all those things. And I just love hearing how you love your family. It sounds like you have a really good relationship still with all your siblings. Your parents were believers.
So they were first generation believers.
So were my parents were the same, and do they say that to you? We're first. Did they say that to you? Yeah,
I feel like now I say it. Now I'm repeating it.
Yeah,
like it was just they always say that we're first generation believers.
I know. You know what though? I actually have to give it to them. Like that is a good excuse. It's like, hey, you're like, we're trying to figure it out as second generation believers, and it's all hard. And like, could you imagine how hard it was for our parents? Oh man,
it's true.
And then growing up, you know, in the 70s and 80s, oh gosh. I love that. I feel like this is a rhetorical question, but it's not. Like how much of your parents, you know, marriage, their faith, the family dynamics built into you that you mentioned that this producer was saying, you have too many boundaries. You have too many values and you're not going to fit in here because of those.
Yeah.
How much of that upbringing in that family unit and stability played into that for you and defining who you are?
For sure. Yeah. So like I said, there are 5 girls in our family, and it's really interesting as I look back, because at least, I mean, my personality naturally is like a very naturally pretty confident, pretty outgoing, pretty much like, oh, if I want to do something, I can do it, just like for good or for bad. That's just kind of naturally how I roll. But my parents, they, you know, I don't know if everyone, if this is like the best plan for how they raised us or not, but especially as girls, I think they wanted us to like, to not compromise in relationships, to not let some guy come swoop us off our feet and to find our identity in that. So they raised us very much to be like, you, like we were the queens of the world. That sounds kind of terrible to say, but we were just raised like to kind of think we were like amazing. And that if a guy wanted to like get to know us or pursue us, like he would like, he's going to have to really work for it, you know, because we are just like these treasures, you know? And so I really felt that way. So even when it came to this interview, I just like, yes, I wanted to like see if I could make my faith and this work in a way that I wouldn't compromise. But it was like, once I was in that place, it was a no-brainer for me. It wasn't even a temptation, honestly, because I was just so confident in who my parents had told me I was, like in Christ and the kind of woman that I was. And to me, it was like, why would I like choose to lower myself to a level that like I don't even believe in or think like I'm just more valuable than that. I'm more worthy than that. Like there was all these, all the posters across like in the room that we were sitting in. And I guess it was all the models and, you know, models don't wear a lot. So I was just sitting there and I was thinking in my head, I didn't tell him this. I wish I did, but I was like, I don't want to become another poster on this wall. I don't want to be another naked woman on the wall, basically. Like I am worth so much more than that. And I really do credit my parents for that. You know, like they raised us that way. My husband sometimes he's like, wow, like I really see that still coming out in you. Like maybe sometimes not always in the best way, but I just like I just believe that I am really worthy, you know? And I have to remember where that comes from and where my identity is found in that. But I do think that is a good quality, especially for women in this day and age, to know like where their worth is found, where their identity is found, because they're just, you know, whether it's appearances or a relationship, there's so many things pulling us away. And so yeah, I think that really drove my decision-making of what I wanted to do like as an adult and into the future.
Was, so you're mentioning just the things that were spoken to you, that you are valuable, you are, you know, worthy, you're worth more, you're a princess, right? Like all these things, like royalty.
Yeah, pretty much.
And I have three daughters myself. One's turning 10 soon. And so I'm starting to see, and I have a 6-year-old, and I'm starting to see how they are responding. And I came from a very small family. I had one brother, who I told you he passed away a couple years ago.
And, so sorry.
Yeah. Thank you. And so I don't have any like foundation for understanding this. And so I'm trying to learn how to do this, but how much of what was spoken to you that built that identity, what came from your father? And the reason I'm emphasizing some of this stuff is because, first of all, it helps me because I'm trying to develop in me a foundation of how I should raise my daughters. But also for those listening, the value and the importance of the words that we speak to our children and how they shape their view of themselves. And so how much of this was coming from your father?
I would say probably like 90%+, honestly, is when I look back, as I'm 36 now. And I look back, like even at this point, and the relationship that impacted me the most definitely was my dad. And him and I, like, we just naturally, I feel like, have a good mesh and get along well. And still to this day, we have a great relationship. And I'm so grateful for that. He's like a giant, you know, teddy bear, but also like very, can be very firm and stuff. He's just
like,
so
tall.
He's 6'4", but he, like, now his hair is kind of like white, but he always had a very like full head of black hair, big, like you, big beard. He always had a big beard. I've never seen him without a beard in my life, but just a very strong masculine presence in our life. And I mean, when it, you know, you have five girls and he's thinking ahead to like dating and relationships, and he just helped us set the bar very, very high. And in some ways I maybe ran with that in a way that was unhealthy, like to a point of like finding my worth in my purity, things that weren't good. But the bar that they set, and my dad in particular, of just like telling us what we're worth, what kind of man that you know we deserve to be with as a daughter of God, it really, like, we had high expectations. And like any guy who was interested in us, we were kind of extreme, but like it didn't scare the guys away, so I'm like, it worked. Like any guy, even if he would just like kind of be interested, we would always send them to our dad, and our dad would like vet him. So you'd have these guys who are like, I just want to go on a date. And now they're sitting at like a Starbucks meeting with our dad, and he's like grilling them. And then he's like, I wouldn't really recommend him. And then the guy gets sent on his way, because we're like, you know, no, like it wasn't enough for a guy to be like really cute or good looking. Like he really had to have the character to go with it if we were genuinely going to be interested. And our dad has sat with so many young men over the years. He's been in so many different situations. To really, I think his heart was to love us, to protect us, to show us the kind of man that we want to end up with. And so, yeah, I would say like the father's influence and the father's relationship to his daughters is just so primary and so key. And I think it really ultimately can like change the trajectory of a woman's life. And I think you see that the lack of involved fathers are just like, oh, dads are kind of dumb, they're idiots. You know, when the mom is like the smart one, it's like, you see this impacting women. I mean, just the boom of like OnlyFans, even. I think that's a direct result. All these like Gen Z, even young millennial women, I think that's a direct result of just the insecurities and the cry for that masculine love and that affection that I think really needs to come from the father. And he's ultimately reflecting Christ, but I think we need that in the home more. And I'm beyond grateful to have had that, because I know that's not everyone's story.
Yeah. And I think what you're saying is just incredibly powerful for us as fathers to embrace. I'm learning to be affectionate. I'm learning to be patient and gentle with my little girls, but also like firm. And like, it's a weird dynamic understanding how to raise a daughter. Was your dad affectionate? Was he, he was open to affection and let you always be close to him? And
yeah, it's interesting, because even when I look back, my dad is definitely even like more physically affectionate than my mom, which is super interesting. And so when I look back, and even now, it's like anytime I come over, he always like comes in, gives me a hug, like kisses me on the head. You know, I'm so giant, but he's gianter, so he can still kiss me on the head. And he's just like, it doesn't even feel weird. It's just been how it was from the beginning. I wouldn't say our family's like overly affectionate, like our family as a whole. Mm. My smaller family unit, my husband and I and our kids, I would say like we're very affectionate as a family, but I look back on my family, and my dad in particular was the more affectionate one, and just made like that, like hugs or a kiss on the head or whatever, like very natural and normal. Another thing that I remember that he always did, and they're small things, but I really do think they make an impact. He was always the one who, like at night, he would always lay in bed with us kids. He would like rotate around the room because there's so many of us, or we would all pile in one bed, and he would read to us almost every single night. And I think that just that connection to that bonding of like him laying there, we're all like, you know, kids, or, you know, we probably did this till we were, I don't know what age, but like, you know, you're all just like snuggled up. And I think it's like, I don't even think he realized like the impact that had, but looking back, I realized that was really special. That's like a core memory for me and a core connection to my dad, that it just seems random. Like, you know, we're reading Narnia books together, but we have that physical connection, that emotional connection, that love, like that time just spent reading to us, you know? So it's small things like that that I look back on, and I wouldn't even been able to realize how valuable they are until now. And especially having my own kids, I'm like, wow, those small things can really impact someone more than we even realize, you know?
Mm-hmm. You mentioned purity culture, and you mentioned, you know, how it could have had some negative effects. But some of the positive things I'm thinking about, did that, those words that he spoke over you, the affection he showed you, do you feel like that helped you and your sisters not have a overly powerful desire to seek that outside, like seek that from another man
This
pursuit of trying to find a husband, finding a relationship long term?
Yeah, for sure. Well, and one of the other things that our dad was great about, because he has always been like a big reader, but he basically was like very good about investing in resources. Like when we got to the age, like I got really interested in reading when I was like 13 or 14, and he would basically just like get us whatever books that, like, we loved reading, like Christian living stuff. So I read every book you can think of in the category of like teenage, you know, Christian living or dating or relationships, courtship, whatever. And he just invested in those and was like very much like, yes, this is so great. This is so good. Like he would always get the books for us. And I think his love of reading and learning really helped me to love that as well. And I learned so much just by digging into resources and having the opportunity to do that. And that was another aspect that really shaped me and really helped me as I was like deciding what I wanted to do. I mean, we had some, like our family, we had some kind of general boundaries or guidelines that pretty much like, I would speak more for the sisters, because we're all kind of like, I don't know, we like had a very strong sisterly culture. So we all are like practically the same. We all think the same, and like we have different personalities, but like a very strong bond. And that helped too. But we all, up to this point, four of us are married, one is still single, but we all chose to save our first kiss for marriage. So we didn't kiss until we were literally at the altar.
Wow.
I don't know if all of our husbands were like so excited about kissing in front of a crowd, you know, for the first time. But we all did that. We all saved sex for marriage. We all saved our first kiss for marriage. And those were just things that were like non-negotiables in our mind. And when I started sharing that story, like online, especially about my husband and I, because we were running Girl to Find at this point. So our wedding was live streamed. Our first kiss, you know, everyone was like following our relationship. It was like this huge deal. And you had people who were like, this is amazing. Like, we need more of this in our world, where like you can see a woman who knows her worth, who has these boundaries, and she can still get married. She's not like, no one's ever going to marry her. You know, guy's ever going to want to be with her. And I remember like that confidence. I remember being in church, and a guy, but this was before I was married, he asked me, you know, on a date. And I just was like, you know, this was when I was in my 20s and I had like, I just didn't have time to like mess around. I was like, I don't want to get to know a guy if he's just not that serious. So like right there on the spot, I'm just kind of weird like this. I was like, you know, I'm kind of like more conservative than most girls. Like, I'm not going to kiss until my wedding day. So if that scares you away or you're just not interested in that, like, let's not even go on a date. And he was like, I actually think that's pretty cool. And I was like, okay, then we could go on a date and like, you know, just, you know, and it just like, I never, yeah. There was never this awkwardness of like, he's going to try to make these moves or like, he has this expectation that I'm, and we were just very clear. So I would say my maiden name is Baird, and it was like the Baird sisters had a very strong reputation and a very specific like reputation of what they would do, wouldn't do. You know, some people thought we were like weird and like super extreme, like the most conservative family that they knew, you know, and then other people thought it was really aspirational. But what was amazing is that us girls didn't view it as like we were the weird ones, we were the odd ones. We viewed ourselves kind of like as the leaders, like, no, we're impacting, we're an example to other families and to other women to strive for something more, to strive for something better in our minds. And looking back, it's like, I think that's awesome, you know, that we were confident in that way and didn't view ourselves as like, oh yeah, I'm not going to kiss until I get married, or yeah, we don't really date, we do more like courting, or yeah, he's going to talk to our dad, you know, like we didn't have that embarrassment or shame. It was like, no, we're proud of this.
Well, Bethany, I think we're having a renaissance period in our culture. What you're explaining and saying that you have to, like, you came out and you're like, hey, I don't have time for this, so I'm just going to tell you my boundaries. I'm just going to tell you what I'm expecting. And if you don't have any interest, then that's fine. Let's move on and I'll be happy. You'll be happy. What's interesting about this, and this also goes into, you know, I think as we transition to your book, is that that used to be an unspoken understanding. You didn't touch a woman in any way if she wasn't your wife. And so if you were courting a woman, that was not your wife until that consummation took place, until that contract was signed, until all of those things were met. And so there was no like, you know, what's this unspoken boundary? What's allowed? What's not allowed? It was just known like, oh, there is no touching. I'm not touched. She's not mine yet. I'm not allowed to have her. And that has, over the years, over the decades, over the centuries, has been eroded by culture. It's been eroded in these ways of like, well, there is expectations now. Like, hey, how am I supposed to know, you know, if I want to marry you if I don't know how you are in bed or how you kiss or, you know, if I even like you like that.
Yeah.
Instead of that being a gift for the for those who have committed. Like that's a gift of like, you get this when we've committed, not before. Yeah. And so that erosion has taken place. And even you were talking about, you know, people wanting to know, you know, knowing where you stand, and we talked about OnlyFans, which is so sad. I've never been on OnlyFans, of course, but you see lots of stuff about it on social media now.
Yes, yeah.
And you're seeing this thing now of a switchback of where it used to be like, you know, how do you know if you want to be with someone unless you've been with them?
Yeah.
And now there's like you've been with too many people. You're unwanted. There's no way, like, and that's becoming a trend of like, no, like you're unclean. We can't be with. Yeah. So there's this renaissance taking place of recognizing, like, wait a minute, these boundaries that used to exist in culture, the Christian cultural norms, are actually good. They actually have value in, you know, protection for both sides, the men and the women and our children. So it's really cool that your family saw that as important. And you were leaders, but in something that was already, it should have been a norm, but it's been eroded away to almost nothing. And now there's a whole generation. What generation are you? I don't even know all the different generations.
I'm a millennial. I'm 36. So okay.
Yeah, millennials are a pretty big generation. I'm like one of the oldest millennials, I think. But there's a switchback of this, like not going back to a purity culture, but going back to a boundaries culture of like, wait a minute, there's these things that we should be protecting because they're good. Like family is good. Like you loved your big family. And I was going to ask a question, actually.
Yeah.
You talked about the Baird girls, right?
Yeah.
There's a beauty in not just you all having the same moral boundaries and moral foundation, but did you guys growing up, like, was there like an extra level of protection for each other? Like your brother's like, no, we don't like that dude. Or your sisters are like, what are you doing? He's crazy. Like there's an
extra protection. Yes. So I had one experience. I actually share about it in our book, Made to Be She, because it's difficult, you know, like relationships, you look back on them and you're like, oh, now I can see so clearly. But yeah. There was a guy when I was in my, I don't know, I was like 23 or 24. I get it all mixed up now anyway, but he was, you know, I thought he came from like this conservative church and conservative family. So he knew the lingo. He knew how to say everything. And I checked all the boxes. And so I kind of got starry eyed. Like I was just naive. I was like, yes, he knows all the lingo. He can say everything. But my brother, he was actually living with my brother at the time. And my brother was like, I do not like this guy. I don't think he's good. My family, they were like, of them were like, we're not Kristen, you know, we're like besties. And she was not a fan. And I'm like, and so literally, I remember just telling
him. You just don't understand.
Yeah, like, you don't understand. And, you know, like, I was just telling them, I'm like, y'all all want me to just be miserable and single forever. Because there were always these comments around, like, Bethany. Like, people would always say, like, oh, I think Bethany, she might be, like, you know, maybe, like, she might be single for life. Like, she might be called to ministry for life. And people would talk about that. And I was like, I don't want that. And I was like, yes, I want to serve the Lord, but I want to get married. Like, and so it just kind of annoyed me when I just thought if people were against this relationship that maybe it's just because they wanted me to be miserable. And long story short, I was just kind of like taken up with the fact that he could say everything. And it took me a while in the relationship to see like what do his actions actually say? Okay, your word is like saying something is one thing, but do your actions actually follow up? And it took me a while to see like, okay, what he says and then what he actually does are two very different things. And so the relationship ended and it was very hard for me just because I chose to end it, but I was so honestly kind of like embarrassed and ashamed that I had stayed in this relationship. We had, you know, boundaries and, you know, it was still like an intentional relationship. Technically we were like courting. But I guess I was just like, oh my gosh, how did I, coming from this strong family culture, coming, even my siblings and my parents weren't like super big fans of it. Like, how did I get swept up in that? But I think the saving grace of it all is that I did have my family around and my sister, Kristen, who were like best friends still to this day. I was able to look and be like, oh, y'all actually cared about me and y'all really loved me. And you weren't willing to just be like, I mean, if it makes you happy, go for it. You know, like they wanted what was best for me. And I can't imagine if I had to just fly solo and had to figure that out on my own. But I had my parents, I had my siblings, and they were such a support system. And even though I was kind of stupid through the process, they never like gave up on me. They never like, you know, they stood by me. And, you know, now I look back and I'm like, I'm so grateful I didn't marry that person. And I'm so happy I married who I married. But yeah, like those sibling relationships are just absolutely priceless in moments like that. Cause of course, none of us, you know, even your kids, it's like, I don't want to think about my kids making a bad decision, but it's like, we're human, we're sinful. We will at times not make the best choice, even if it's not detrimental. But knowing that your parents, knowing that your siblings don't base their love for you off of how well you perform is amazing. And having had that to go back to when I was like heartbroken and like so embarrassed, I'm like, oh, I hate this, you know, and knowing like I have a memory, like my dad and I, he's taking me to tacos in the morning and he's not a man of many words, you know, he is more of a quiet man, but just his presence and the words that he did, you know, share with me and speak over me and just being willing to spend time with me when I was like so brokenhearted and not being like awkward or like, oh, my daughter, she's like having a hard time. You know, it's like he was pressed into that and like wanted to be there for me. It helped because as a woman, I want that presence. And I, you know, obviously I want to get married and I crave that masculinity and that God's design for the man and woman. And I think the father can fill such a beautiful role in that way if he's willing to enter into that. And so I think that's part of what helped me to make those good choices and ultimately marry someone that everyone was really excited about. But yeah, even as I grew up, you know, like I'm 36 today, I was just at my parents' house because I was doing some work for Girl Defined and some of our stuff is over still at their house. And my dad, it's like, you know, he comes in and I have my daughter with me and he's like, hey guys, and he's giving my daughter a snack and we're talking about our day. He's very relational. Like he doesn't always have a ton of stuff to say, but he makes his presence known even now as like, I'm a wife and a mom. And it's not in a weird way. It's just like, I love you and I care about you. And yeah, I realize like it still impacts me to this day, you know, his care for me.
This is just a huge promo and plug for large families who love the Lord. that's what I'm really getting at here is the value of that. I look forward, what you're talking about, I look forward to it with my kids. I'm like, man, I just hope I don't mess this up because I want that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I just want to, I love that. Like, I love that you're a dad who even thinks like that because it's like so many men don't and they don't realize like you don't have to have all the right things to say, you know, you don't have to you don't have to be super comfortable. It's like, you know, just taking those steps of just being there or asking a simple question, or, you know, when your daughter's having like a hard time and you're like, this is the most stupid thing, like, okay, it's makeup or it's whatever, you know, but just entering into that and letting her things be a big deal to you, or just taking her to get tacos. You know, I'm a good San Antonio, Texas girl. So tacos, breakfast tacos, yeah, are like breakfast what tacos. We always eat.
Like, okay. I like yeah. it. I can be down with
breakfast. Cheese. Yeah. So I want to encourage the fathers in that, like as a daughter and now looking back, it's like, if you met my dad, it's like, he's not a man of many words, you know, he's a big man, but not a man of many words. And it's like the words weren't always the thing that brought that level of security and comfort. It really was just like his presence and his care. And I know he loves me and cares for me. And I mean, this is just what happens. But, and I think a lot of daughters feel this way, grown daughters. Even though I've been married for 6 years, when something happens around the house or my car, it's like my first instinct is always to call my dad. Not because I have this weird, creepy relationship with him, but it's like, that's just who I've always, dad's always there, you know? And the crazy thing is even I have my husband and he ends up being my first.
We're looking for people who have been blessed by this free podcast and our free daily marriage prayer emails and who want to help be a blessing to others. Creating and hosting this podcast and sending out our daily emails do incur a financial cost. And we want to invite you to join our faithful patron team to help financially support these resources so that they can remain free for all who need them. Please join our patron team today and become one of the faithful financial supporters who desires to help bless thousands of marriages around the world. Your support will help us pay for the creation, hosting, and promotion of our podcast and daily emails. Thank you, and we hope to see you become a Marriage After God patron.
Well, obviously, because I'm like, oh no, my husband will do anything. But I know, like, when my husband's traveled, or if he's like across town and my dad's closer by, it's like, I know, even to this day, as a 36-year-old, and all of us girls feel this way, if we called our dad in the middle of any time, he would drop everything he's doing to be there for us. Like, he has just always been that way. And these are things I'm realizing, like, wow, like that is such a huge blessing. Like not all daughters have that, and not all like grown women have that in a father. And so it's something to just be like, I'm just so grateful for it now, because it's amazing. So it's, yeah.
Well, let's just be praying for more and more. Like, all my listeners, you guys, I know this might sound like so far-fetched to you guys, maybe, but be praying and desiring for this type of relationship with your children. And that it takes serving the God, it takes being in the Word of God, and just a little bit of intentionality. And God's the one that's going to guide us in these things and give us the strength to accomplish these things. And it's not about a perfection, it's about presence.
Yeah.
It's about intentionality. So just want to encourage you with that. But Bethany, as we, I want to get into your book, because like I was talking about before, this renaissance that's kind of taken place, where there's this recognition of like, oh no, we've gone so far away from things that actually are good. And how do we get back to it? And that this is what Made to Be She is about, is getting back to something that was good. The original design, the original idea, the original definition of who you are as a woman, who any girl is in this world, and how God's defined. And what was the catalyst for you and your sister to write this book? I can imagine the world we live in right now. But what was it for you guys? What was the catalyst for you guys to write this book?
So we started our whole Girl Defined, you know, ministry out writing a book called Girl Defined, God's Radical Design for Beauty, Femininity, and Identity. And we kicked that book off with like our modeling stories and, you know, just kind of really digging into the basics of what it means to be a woman. This was like before everything with gender and marriage went down, like in the US. So times were like different back then, and all the trans movement, just everything. It was very different. Like,
things have changed a lot in the last 10 years.
Yeah, it's changed so much. And so we, you know, fast forwarding to today, this book came out a few months ago, and we just realized like the landscape of our day has changed so much. And the impact of TikTok, even though there can be positive impacts of like TikTok and Instagram, it has been so hugely influential on all people, but especially young women. I mean, just, you know, the trans movement has specifically impacted young women in a really negative way, or just young women. I mean, there is a massive boom of really Gen Z women being, and they're very open about it, but just the amount of cosmetic procedures that they're having done, like literally in their 20s, life-altering procedures of just every single aspect of their body, they're chopping up and, you know, and pumping in and doing all of this stuff too. And if, you know, it's not to say all those things are bad. Like, you can never, you know, get your ears pierced or get lip fillers. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that I think our view of what does it mean to be a woman? Who does God say we are? I think it's just been so lost in our culture. You have to like seek after it. And so if you are a parent with daughters, it's like, they're naturally not going to come across this stuff on TikTok unless they really change their, you know, followed specific people and they're very intentional. The majority of what they're going to get is basically all of these voices telling them, this is who you need to be. This is what you need to look like. This is the kind of guy that you need to be with. Or maybe this is the kind of girl you think sex relationships. Or maybe have you ever considered, you know, are you trans? And it like sounds kind of like, oh no, that's, you know, we're a Christian family, or this is how we're raising our kids. But it's like the pressure on young women is so huge. And I think one of the number one questions as women, and I think men too, but speaking as a woman, is like, who am I and where is my worth found? Like, we as women want to be worthy. We want to be loved. We want to feel valued. And if we don't know ultimately where that comes from, if we don't know, like, who is our designer? Who is our creator? Who does he say we are? And as cheesy as it sounds, like, who, we are adopted into his family truly as royalty. Like, we are daughters of God. And just the confidence that I had growing up of like, wow, I am so valuable. I am so worthy. Even if sometimes I got a little prideful about it, but I knew, I never questioned where my worth was found. I think just that simple understanding can radically change a woman's life, a young girl's life as she grows up. And so I would encourage parents, like, this isn't a book made to be she just to throw at your daughters and be like, hey, read this book. I think that fathers and mothers need to know, like, okay, what are the battles that are raging on around womanhood, around girlhood in my day? What has impacted? How have the different feminist movements and waves of feminism, how have they impacted the culture that we're in today? How is the trans movement? How is the gender movement? How are even things like, you know, abortion and the birth control pill? Like, how people don't realize, like, all of these little niche topics have impacted womanhood so much. And we think we've just evolved here, like, oh, This is just how everyone thinks. Like, no, there have been so many strategic movements to get girls and women to grow up and to embrace a certain lifestyle. And if you as a parent can better understand that, you'll actually be able to relate to your daughter and be able to mentor her and guide her. So it's like, my dream would be if every parent who has a daughter read Made to Be She, because I think you would just feel, especially fathers, like, you would feel so much more equipped to speak into her life, or at least understand, like, oh, I see she's really asking these questions, or she's struggling with her identity in this way. That makes sense. I see where it's coming from. And you'll have a broader understanding of why she's struggling or why she's thinking. And you won't just be like, oh, go talk to your mom, or oh, here's a book. You know, you'll actually be able to love her better.
Well, and you said that what you said is so true. There's been a strategic effort to get to where we're at. It's not just like a natural evolution that they want you to think like, oh, this is just us maturing as up society. No, this has been a strategic thing. And one of them is degrading the value of the father. Like we mentioned earlier on, TV show after TV show after TV show growing up has just been one thing after another showing, you know, fathers as the, you know, the idiot in the home, and they're inept and they don't know what they're doing and they make the dumb decisions, which there are a lot of those fathers and that happens, but that's been, you know, kind of hammered into us. I was talking to my son. He asked me a question. I can't remember what it was. He's really smart and he thinks about a lot of things. He asked me a question about something with something. And I brought him back. I was like, years ago, and this took place during the feminist movements early on, there was this effort to get mothers and wives out of the home and into the workforce, and getting them working in it, which there's nothing wrong with a woman working in general. And this, in the idea, I mean, Proverbs 30 woman is a very resourceful working woman in the home. She knows how to do all of those things in the home. But anyways, getting her out of the home, I said, then what happens is you have to put the kids in school. And then, he was asking about food. That's what it was. He was talking about how we can make so much healthier food than they make in the stores. Yeah. I was like, well, all the stores got their ideas from the home and they just made them cheaper and faster. And I said, the reason they did that is because when you got to encourage women to get out of the home and go work, you had to make certain things like cooking easier. Hey, look, we have these canned items. We have these pre-made meals. We have this microwave dinner. We have this box. And I was just going on this big rant with him and saying, I was like, they did that to make it easier so wives and mothers can actually have time to go work. And then they take kids and put them in school. And I was like, you have this effort to get people separated and all of a sudden you have this broken whole thing. And I was like, it started a long time ago. And
how old is your son?
He's 12.
This is amazing. Like, I am just like, yes, like cheering over here. Like, I can't believe you're having that conversation with him. Like, that's amazing.
Well, it's hard for me not to, because he asked me a question, the easy question would be like, oh yeah, because home cooked food's better. But in reality, like, the industrial food is what it is, because everyone just home cooked. Like we, yeah. there was no, you go to the grocery store and buy a box of this, or, you know, you just made it at home. And, yeah. And so it just came to, but it all broke down to like, the reason we went the direction we did was money, power, control, and also the destruction of the family unit, because then you get more control. You get less people being successful on their own and needing from the government. And, it sounds like a quote unquote conspiracy, but it's a conspiracy spiritually. This has been a lot. I mean, this has been generations of the enemy influencing culture to go this way because he hates God's design for men, for women. And that's what you guys are combating with this book.
Yeah. Well, and like you were saying, that there is a bit of a movement of, you know, there, and there are, there's always like multiple sides to everything, but kind of like this trad movement, and there are weird sides to it. But I think there are positive sides of women who are like, wait, I think we've been taken for a ride. Like, we've been told that happiness and fulfillment is being like the same as men and doing the same thing, same things as them, having the same sorts of jobs, making the same sort of money. But in a lot of ways, no, we need to do even more. And we've like, you know, been convinced and brainwashed basically to think like the least valuable thing I can do is like have children and be at home. No, I need to go out. And then you have a lot of women who are like in their 30s, 40s, who haven't had kids, haven't been really able to find someone to marry. And they're like, really? Wait, like, is this all there is? Yeah. And you see the epidemic of like medication and how many women are on medication just for anxiety and depression. And you're like, wait, are we really happier? Like, is this really the dream life? And so I think women are waking up and are saying like, wait a minute, like maybe there was something to like women being at home. And I mean, if you rewind in time and you see this aspect of the feminist movement, it wasn't that women were so unhappy in the home. It was a small group of women who basically went in and were like, all this propaganda of telling them like, hey, you're actually miserable there. And we're telling them, here's all the reasons you're miserable. And the women were like, oh, maybe we are miserable, you know, and then we're all at the home. And now we're looking back like, wait, maybe there were some aspects to what they, you know, the woman being home with the kids and being more involved in the family unit, being actually a place of security and love. Like, maybe there was something to that. So it's interesting because our book, Made to Be She, as much as like there's some extreme stuff going on with the trans movement or, you know, OnlyFans or whatever, the openness to this book is very different than when we wrote Girl Defined so many years ago, because people have kind of lived through such a swing, pushing people out of the home, pushing people towards all the crazy gender stuff, that even just the average person, like these conversations we're having on social media, they're not as controversial as they once were. When we were talking about this feminism or the all the gender stuff, you know, 6 years ago, 7 years ago, 8 years ago, it was like causing a firestorm online, and people were like, I can't believe they're saying this. And now we have a lot more of people like, actually, you have a point. We need more of this. And so it's encouraging to see, and I'm excited about it, but I love that what you're saying, like, it's true. It's not just random. It's not just, all this isn't just accidental. Like, ultimately it goes back to God's design for us and ultimately back to creation, which is why Kirsten and I always unpack like, who did God created us to be? Even back to like Adam and Eve, what was the design he was setting forth? There's so much we can learn and understand. And I think it's important even for your own marriage to understand like, what is God's design, good design for marriage? What is his good design for family? Because if you don't know that, how can you fight for that? How can you live for that? Especially as a husband, how can you have purpose and intention saying, hey, family, here's where we're going, if you don't even understand it? And so even though this is a book for women, like as dads, I'm like, you could benefit so much because ultimately you are the leaders, you are the heads. And you know, equipping yourself to better stand in that can change your whole family.
I was thinking about when we were talking about getting, you know, mothers and wives out of the home and putting them in the workforce. And like, my wife, and I know many women are this way. Have you heard I think there was a book like, women are like spaghetti, men are like, I mess up. Like, women think like spaghetti and men think like waffles or something like that. Anyways. I know personally. So my wife's always like, why don't you think about everything like I think of? I'm like, I just don't. There's like 99% of the things I shut off and I'm thinking about this one thing. And you put a woman who can put all these connections together, the way God made her, right? So my wife's thinking about everything in our home all the time. She's thinking about the laundry. Yeah. She's thinking about the kids. She's thinking about homeschool. She's thinking about health of the kids. She's thinking about her own health. She's thinking all this stuff all at the same time. Then her relationship with her friends. Yeah. And then you take that and you're like, now you got to think about all of the internal interpersonal relationships at a workplace and the business side of things. And, and then they come home and like, that's a, like while you talked about there's a lot of medication, there's a lot of antidepressants, anxiety stuff. Like that's a lot just in a home.
Yeah.
And so like men are built in a certain way. Like me, like I can shut off, like when I leave this, when I'm done with this interview, I will shut this off And I won't even get another thought until the next time I have to think about it.
Yes,
and I could focus on the next thing in front of me. And I think God intentionally did that so that men can focus on what's in front of them and not have this distraction. It sounds sad, but like I can be at home with my family and then I can be at work with my work.
Yes, for
and
sure.
And I can turn those things on and off so that I can handle the weight of these various things. And it's a tragedy to try and reverse those things and think that we can go against God's design and just do it anyway. Like, well, I'm just going to do it, you know?
Yeah. And I think it ties into directly, which this is probably for like within the Christian circles, maybe one of the more controversial parts of our book, Made to Be She, but we give the whole history of the birth control pill and that movement and just how that came to be. Because when I was getting married... When I got married 6 years ago, it was interesting. I was in a premarital class and this is like a strong Christian Bible believing church, but it was so crazy to me that like it was never like, oh yeah, like have you thought about like, when do you want to have kids or having kids? Big families are amazing or having kids is amazing. Yeah. It was always put in kind of like a negative way. And they were encouraging all of us girls. They were like, okay, now make sure you go to the doctor before you get married. Make sure you visit your OB before you get married. And I was like, because my husband and I were pretty much open to having kids. I was 30 when we got married. We both came from big families. So like, we were like, we got to get college, you know? And so I kept asking, I was like, finally asked one of the leaders. I was like, why do I need to go see the doctor? And she was like, well, you need to make sure if you're not on birth control that you get that taken care of before you get married. And then another couple who had been married forever, their best advice was make sure you do not get pregnant within the first year. That is just so hard and so terrible and all this stuff. And I'm like, this is like one of the more solid churches in San Antonio. And this is the advice that we're giving. And obviously this is a conversation that each couple needs to have and get like wisdom on. But I just think it's so sad how even in a lot of solid Christian churches and communities, children for like newlywed couples are like, that's going to really be a burden on your life. That's going to like take away from your life. Like, don't do that, you know? And I really do think that our churches and our community, like Christian communities have been so impacted by like this whole birth control movement, you know, dating back to really even like Margaret Sanger and Planned Parenthood. And we unpack that in our book, Made to Be She, but it's like, it's so sad to me. And I think it ties back to what you're saying, that women are stretched in every different direction, needing to help provide, needing to be home, needing to manage all their relationships, all of this stuff, that the thought of having like more than two kids for a lot of women is like, how would I ever even manage that? And I think that if we could take a step back and realize like what actually matters in life and like what we're going to actually want maybe when we're older, it oftentimes is much more in line with the way that God designed things and the way that, you know, he created us. And so it's sad. I mean, like, I only have two kids. I wish I had more, you know, like it's been harder for my husband and I. We've had a lot of miscarriages and we're trying, you know, but it's like, that hasn't been our story, but it's like, it's amazing coming from a big family of eight kids, my husband from a family of seven, like it's one of the coolest things ever, you know? And so I it's sad to me how that core aspect of who we are as women has been so diminished that most of us are like, okay, oh, you know, that's just too much. And I think it's because we've been so stretched thin that we couldn't even comprehend a different way, you know?
I think the key here is having that desire that God has, like that we be fruitful and multiply. Like, again, so in your situation, like you said, you've had miscarriages. I've had many conversations with women like that. We have friends that have gone through that. So it's not a question of number of children. It's a question of the posture of the heart toward children. And like you're saying, like someone, you know, Christians coming in, well-meaning Christians and saying, hey, don't get pregnant in the first year and like get on birth control. Like they're just repeating things that they've been told as quote unquote worldly wisdom. And that's exactly what it is. Worldly wisdom. It's not biblical wisdom. If a young Christian couple comes to me and says, oh, you know, what should we do? Like our parents don't think we should get pregnant. You know, we want kids and, but we're, you know, my job is, you know, only pays so much. We just got married. And my thing is like, children are a blessing from the Lord. Children are a blessing from the Lord. It doesn't matter. I'm not going to give you criteria on like when, because to be honest, you can try right now and not get pregnant for years. I just have to agree with the guy that they couldn't have kids for 8 years and then God just made it happen. So it's not a question of you know, that your timing, it's a question of the posture of the heart toward children and trusting the Lord with that. And so I will always tell people like, hey, if you want children, that's exactly what God's put in your heart because God's loved children and he believes in big families. And whether or not he gives you a big family, that's on him.
Yes, but it's so true, you know,
that we should be advocates. I've everything we heard when we were first married was negative towards children. Like, oh, well,
He's like, once you have your first baby, there goes all your traveling. There goes all your, we've done more traveling. I mean, we haven't done any international traveling yet since having kids, but we've done more traveling as parents than we were single.
We only have two kids, but we literally have, we've gone to many, like, international, gone on many international trips. Cause I had a sister who married a Ukrainian. We had connections with Girl Defined to Poland. My family heritage is from Austria. And so, yeah, it's hard. Like, it was harder than just, like, getting to chill and, like, watch a movie the whole time, you know, when your toddler wakes up in the middle of the airplane and is, like, screaming. But it's, like, those memories are so amazing. Yeah. And it's so sad. Like, you're saying, like, oh, it's going to ruin your life. It's like, no. Like, oftentimes you become more able to handle more and more capable by having kids. And, you know, I mean, since having kids, it's, like, everything in our life has kind of, like, we've had to work to provide more. So it's, like, financially we make more money, not because
statistically, married couples with children are more happy. Christian married couples are the happiest, more joyful. That now I know people are listening and be like, that's not us, but statistically it's true. Statistically more financially well off, have more money in savings, have less debt. God's got a design and it makes sense. There's a verse that I wanted to bring up. It's one of the probably most controversial verses in the Bible when it comes to women. And there's a lot of them, but I don't care. It's the Bible. And it says that a woman will be saved in childbirth. Okay. And lots of people have, you know, discussed over this, but what's beautiful about it, of course we know the saving it's talking about is not salvation, because we know what salvation is. It's not in childbirth. It's in believing in Jesus. But the salvation it's talking about, being saved in childbirth, the curse that the woman was under from the Garden of Eden was to desire the position of her husband. Was like, it's natural. Like, women are often, especially spiritually, more out front, more ready to pray. That a relationship with God is generally more feminine. You know, worshiping seems like a feminine event. It's a thing that you're like, oh, I'm closing my eyes. I'm praising God that I can't see. These are things that women are more apt to do naturally.
Yeah.
And the saving that he's talking about is that curse. It's a saving from that curse. Because like you said, I couldn't imagine having more than two kids because I have so much stuff on my plate. But you know what happens? Yeah. And my wife's gone through this. Every wife that has multiple children goes through this, even one child, is you have to say no to other things. Yes. There's a point where, like, you know what? I'm not going to go focus on that thing over there. It's not as important as that right now. And so, that scripture is so beautiful because biologically, spiritually, physically, the salvation is talking about, the saving is talking about in childbirth, is the saving from that natural draw in that curse from the garden.
Yeah.
Trying to, like, what the feminist movement was. That I'm going to be everything. I'm going to be just like a man. I'm going to be able to make all the money. I'm going to be all that weight in the world that God never intended to be put on the woman. And to be bore by men.
And
love him and submit to Christ. That was his design. And so I just think that's a beautiful, what you're describing is that posture of the heart towards children has got to be so biblically minded, not just, I want lots of kids. Not just, I want to be a mom, but like, I want to follow Christ's design and I desire what he desires and he sees as beautiful. And
Oh, I couldn't agree more. And I do think it's the heart posture, because it's like, I grew up, you know, around a lot of big homeschool families. Everyone had a lot of kids, and it's not just having kids that there's like, oh, something magical about it. It has to be this heart posture of like, God, what do you want? How can I live for you? How can I serve you? How can I raise my family to know you? How can I be present? And that's what's going to create that family culture and that unity and that love. I mean, obviously everyone has their own free will, so you can't control your children, but you can, you know, you can do your best to show them Christ. It's crazy to me though, thinking back to like with women particularly and what you just shared about that verse, because one of the most painful things for a woman to like ever have to go through is infertility and just the deep, deep heartache. Like there's just, I don't know if there's anything that can like that just longing and that inability where you feel like you can't do anything about it and you want it so desperately. And I just think that the pain of that almost shows like the God's design, like his women's desire to be mothers and to nurture and to produce life, and just the core of kind of like, it doesn't mean every woman will have children. We live in a fallen world, but I think that that is ultimately like a huge part of what we were made for, to be reproducers of life. and the beauty in that and the beauty of that. I mean, having started Girl Define as a single woman, now being married and now having kids, I can tell you like the entire ministry has completely changed because it's just my sister and I. We've both had kids within the last few years and we don't, you know, it's not like me and my husband running it and her husband running it where he can just kind of manage everything. It's like, it's the two of us. And so we've scaled back a ton. We traveled all the time to speak in the beginning days, like before we had kids. We pretty much rarely never travel around to speak anymore. We rarely, even interviews like this, because I have to do them during nap time and, you know, and it takes up energy. And even though I love it, I'm like, you know, it is a sacrifice in a way. Like I have to be very choosy and specific as a woman and the primary caretaker of my children and the caretaker of my home and my family. It's like, I choose that. And I'm telling you, like, as a woman who's naturally very ambitious, who's naturally like, I could totally be a woman who like thrives in the workplace and all of this stuff. I have never felt like more alive and more satisfied and more just like you're describing, like the masculine and the feminine. Like I'm telling you, like my health, my overall well-being has never been like better than when I've embraced like my role as a wife and my role as a mother. And it's been a process for me. And just saying no to more that's out there and saying yes to more that's within my home. It's that heart posture. And it's truly been one of the most beautiful like transformations in my own life. And even though it's not like I'm not out with Girl Defined as much getting the accolades and, you know, selling as many books and stuff, it's like, it doesn't compare. Like, this is what God has called me to now. And really like choosing that and surrendering that has been one of the most beautiful things. And for me, I have a husband who is very like, he very much supports that and very much wants that for me. I have that benefit, you know?
I was going to say the beauty in this transition and this transformation, because it's not that yes, it is a sacrifice, but it's more of a allowing of God to transform something. There's this beauty because my wife and I do this. I'm sure your husband comes along and is like, how can I serve you today so that you can accomplish this task? This goal? And so you have that, which is infinitely more valuable than just when it was just you. And then the other part of it is like it turning into a thing. When I brought up Proverbs 31, that the Proverbs 31 woman is very industrious and is able to provide for her family without leaving the family, without leaving them a desk, and is still doing that. And so you finding that balance and learning to do that is making this more valuable, because otherwise you would be producing something that's teaching a false truth. Yeah. You know, you're like, hey, here's the truth. You can do all these things. And you're like, well, no, actually I'm going to do it the way God's called me to do it. I'm still going to accomplish these things the right way. And that is beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you know, I think I used to, even a few years ago, I think I was more like, okay, women, we can, you know, like get that side hustle and make that money and still be home and all of this. And while I do think you can do that sort of thing, I think we have to be careful, because a lot of us, like you only have so much energy, and a lot of other things often suffer when we pour our energy into, like we spread ourselves so thin. And so a lot of times like intimacy can really suffer, because you're like, at the end of the day, you don't even have like, you don't even understand like how beautiful that could be. A lot of women become really bitter or resentful, or they're like, you know, like my husband can drive in the car for an hour and he gets to listen to his podcast. I'm with the kids. Like I'm listening to Baby Shark, you know, like I don't get time for my, and it's like, because when we're so packed with all of these other things, you know, during nap time, we're doing this, during this, we're, you know, we're listening to this, we've got to be over here. It's like, we spread ourselves so thin that we're not even able to enjoy. And so I think I've even changed my perspective a little bit to realizing like, it's not just about the hours in the day. It's about like the emotional output and the energy, and actually like considering that. And as a woman, using that in a way that is like life-giving and beneficial, and not just draining myself to where I fall in bed at night. And I'm like, okay, I got to do it again tomorrow. It's like setting yourself up to actually enjoy it, which is amazing. You know,
I brought this up. I can't remember what podcast it was, but I was having a conversation. I think it was with my wife a while ago, but my wife was going through, she's like, I feel like I'm not doing great. Like, this is so hard. I mean, we just had our sixth baby. Totally understandable where she was feeling, like postpartum, all these things.
Yes.
And I just laid with her and I was like, hey, I was like, you're right. It is. I said, how you're feeling is exactly how you should be feeling. Like what you're feeling is literally the hardest job in the world. Not being facetious. I'm not playing around. I'm not just saying it like, oh, like there's harder jobs. Like, no, I was like, but yours is so hard. No, like genuinely, like motherhood and being a wife, a godly wife and a godly mother, okay, is the hardest job in the world. Being a godly husband and a godly wife and raising children to know God is the hardest job in the world. I was explaining, I said, you have these CEOs, these men who have built massive, amazing things. Okay. And you're like, wow, like, I don't know if I could build a spaceship. I don't know if I could build a, you know, a train, you know, all these things like these businesses that you think, you know, Amazon, like, I don't know if I could do that. Multi-billion, trillion-dollar businesses. I said, and these men, they don't have, like, they've failed their families, all of them. So what's harder?
That's true.
Is it harder to have a successful family that loves God and a successful marriage, or is it harder to start these multi-billion, trillion-dollar businesses? Now, what we're doing, what you're doing, Bethany, what my wife's doing, is the hardest thing ever. It is, and it's like, at the end of the day, when you have grandkids and you're going to look back, you're not going to say, look how successful my girl defined business was.
Yeah,
I'm not going to look back and be like, my wife's not going to be like, look at all of our books we wrote. Yeah. We're going to look back and see how our children are. Yeah. We're going to look back and see how our marriage was. We're going to say, were we successful? That's what we're going to care about. That's what every single person cares about at the end of their life.
I mean, think about what most everything was created for. It ultimately, even these giant businesses and giant companies, it mostly comes back to, like, even roads to travel places. It mostly comes back to bringing people ultimately at the end of the day, something for a family, something for, you know, and so it's like, it's crazy, even though we have all this mega stuff out there that ultimately, like, it's ultimately kind of about the family. And even though we all, like, know that, it's so easy to get distracted and be like, look out there rather than realize, like, what you're saying is just so true.
Well, the world is it's going toward the individual. It's like, no, like, you don't need family. Like, all the AI, like, relationships, all the robots we're getting. It's world's getting weird.
Very weird.
But it's going to this, you know, it's all individual. Like, you don't need anyone. You just need the government. You just need this thing over here. And God's like, no, like, I'm building a family. Like, the church is the bride. It's a woman. That's what, like, that's how God describes the church. And so I think it's beautiful what you guys are doing, that you and your wife, or you and your wife.
That's a different podcast. Probably not. It's not that kind of
you
show.
You and your sister, Kristen, what you guys are doing in your marriages and in your families and in your ministry, in trying to live it out by example, but also speaking that truth out to the world. We need more of it. I love that your family, your first generation parents, first generation Christians, you guys are second generations, that we are starting, you know, because I'm a second generation. I'm looking forward to seeing my kids become like what you guys are, and that just hear that story. And I think we just need to keep pushing that and pointing people back to the truth of who Jesus Christ is, the gospel, because that ultimately, when we believe that, when we submit to that, it changes us. God transforms us by the renewings of our minds. And so the transformation that the world needs to see, the church needs to see, to be honest, that's what we need. The church needs to be transformed, be brought back to the truth of these things. No more negative talk about children. We need to get that talk of birth control out of the church.
Yes.
And just tell people to trust the Lord and to be prayerful and walk with him in these things. But I love what you girls, you women are doing. And I praise God for you. So thank you so much. Where can people find your book? What's it called again? So they can hear.
Made to Be She. And you can find it on our website, girldefined.com, or pretty much wherever. I mean, we're mostly active, like, social media, on Instagram at girldefined. Yep. And then our podcast, Girl Defined. I mean, Girl Defined is like our name. So if you look up Girl Defined on Amazon, you're everywhere. Our books. Yeah. We're everywhere.
Awesome. What's one last thing you'd like to encourage our audience with before we close out?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've loved that we talked so much about just, like, the importance of the role of, like, the marriage and the mother and the father and the family. And, like, I'm in the thick of it too. And I, you know, I just have young kids, so I don't have that experience of, like, being ahead, but coming from a big family and getting to experience these relationships and that those, you know, the family relationships as an adult, I just want to encourage the parents to know, like, it's so worth it. And those small moments you take to invest into your children and to show them, like, what really matters. Like, as an adult child who had parents who did that, it just, like, has shaped me so much. So coming from an adult child, having experienced that, I just want to encourage you in that, because I think that whether your kids can tell you they appreciate it now or not, I think one day they'll grow up to be like me and look back and be like, wow, that actually was really valuable.
Well, that encourages me. I'm in the thick of it with three little girls, and I have three young boys too. And I'm trying to, at the same time, how do I be a boy dad and a girl dad?
And
I just had a brother, and so I'm like,
yeah.
But luckily I have a lot of good families around me that also have a lot of kids, and we're all learning this together, and we're not alone. So again, thank you so much, Bethany. God bless you. And I pray that everyone gets your book. Like you said, fathers should be reading it.
Yeah.
And that we just have we push the Renaissance forward of just drawing people back
to
the heart of the Father.
Yeah.
And his design for men and women, our little girls, our little boys. And yeah. Thank you so much.
I love it. Thank you for having me.
We're looking for people who have been blessed by this free podcast and our free daily marriage prayer emails and who want to help be a blessing to others. Creating and hosting this podcast and sending out our daily emails do incur a financial cost. And we want to invite you to join our faithful patron team to help financially support these resources so that they can remain free for all who need them. Please join our patron team today and become one of the faithful financial supporters who desires to help bless thousands of marriages around the world. Your support will help us pay for the creation, hosting, and promotion of our podcast and daily emails. Thank you, and we hope to see you become a Marriage After God patron. Hey friends, I just wanted to talk to you for a few seconds. We're going to get into the content soon. But if you're new to the show, we just want to invite you to subscribe. We're trying to see 2025 be a year of growth and expansion. We just need people like you to subscribe to our channel and to share about the episodes that you just are totally in love with on social media. And then lastly, if you can leave us a review today, we'd greatly appreciate it. The algorithms will appreciate it. And so thank you so much for joining us on the Marriage After God podcast. And I just pray that you enjoy this content.